You are listening live to the program.
Brought to you by Worth Harley Davidson, home of the biggest selection of Harley Davidsons in the Midwest. I-29 south of the airport, or shop online at WorthHarleyDavidson.com. Why the hell not? You're worth it.
Your teams, your town, your program.
Ready to call for it. Three to his right. Takes the snap, sets the laces, bounces in the pocket. Hit from behind, flips it forward. It is intercepted! Intercepted!
What?
A pick six! David Long Jr. plucks it at the one! He's got an interception return for a touchdown!
Football is a rough game and often a cruel one.
I was just trying to get it out of the end zone. Guy happened to be there to pick it off, so it was a tough situation.
Cliff, explanation, please.
Now, how do you know he has one?
$5 says he does, $10 says it's a doozy.
You just got to keep looking at it, keep trying to find new ways to improve later on in the season, whatever that may be. That's definitely a priority this offseason.
$10 all the way.
And now, wondering what Cliff will be thinking about on that couch this time, Soren Petro.
Right you are, Kay. Right you are. Petro on the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome to the Tuesday edition of the program as we get ready for the divisional round of the playoffs, Chiefs and Bills. We kind of move off the Steeler talk, look ahead to the Bills talk. A lot coming your way today in a short period of time. Kansas basketball tonight at 6, KU at OU, Sooners getting 3. In this matchup, as it is Jed versus Lebo in a battle royale of basketball fandom. We know how those Sooners love their basketball, right, Jed?
Oh, absolutely. And isn't the Lloyd Noble Center going to be just pumped, amped up?
I believe pumped, rocking, maybe in
maybe
jacked.
Even jacked.
Be jacked.
We'll see. We'll see how it is.
Their guys will be jacked.
Early one. I think this is our last 6 o'clock, or do we got one more 6 o'clock?
We got one more. I believe it is on February 1st.
February 1st, okay. So we're going to be out of here at 4:30, so we're going to try to jam-pack what is usually the 5.5 hours we cram into 4 hours. We're going to do it in just 2.5. That's right. More content than you could possibly know what to deal with. Coming up shortly, one Tim Grunhard is going to join us, also known as Grunny. Grunard will be with us in the first hour.
That will never not be funny.
No, I love it. That was a good dude, too. So,
a former Chiefs player is actually the head coach there.
Tim Grunhard.
Tim Grunhard, known as Grunny.
That's right.
I love it.
It's all true. It's an accurate statement. I love it. Coming up in the 3 o'clock hour, Eric Eager will wrap it up in the 4 with Gary Parrish getting you ready for the Hawks and the Sooners, right? So a lot to get to here today. And let's start with Cliff Kingsbury and who the Cardinals will replace him with this time next year. Because it ain't going to work, right? Like, and listen, let me tell you something. Let me just first, full disclosure. My point on this has nothing to do with the fact that going into the final game of the playoffs, my NFL playoff fantasy team was 2 spots clear of elimination. 8 teams, Curtis, you know, you're involved.
Mm-hmm.
8 teams, 6 advance. Next week, 4 will advance. The next week, 2 will advance, and then the Super Bowl will be a champion. All you got to do is avoid the last 2 spots. I'm sitting there in 5th place, 7th and 8th don't advance, and I got my quarterback, and we use 6 points for passing touchdowns, right? Kyler Murray's going to run for like 50, 60 yards. It's unleashed the hounds. So they're going to have draw plays and options, and we're going to see him running around. He'll probably run for a score, throw a couple more. I think he could have a tough day and throw some picks because it's his first playoff game. But certainly they're going to unleash the hounds and be aggressive. And they have no choice but to put it on Kyler Murray because their running backs are banged up, right?
Yep.
So here we go. Strap yourself in. That was the most turd game plan I think I've ever seen. Like, even worse than, like, the Steelers, right? The Steelers had a plan. What the hell was the plan last night for the Cardinals? So the fact that Kyler Murray was returning negative points, and I went from 5th to 7th and was eliminated by a point, is not the sole reason for my venom here. But do you not come away from that game going, can we settle the hell down on Kyler Murray? Oh, well, he didn't have DeAndre Hopkins. Oh, you mean like, you know, Patrick Mahomes didn't have Travis Kelce earlier or didn't have Tyreek Hill earlier? Like, they did go get Zach Ertz, right? They did go get James Conner, right? He was in the game. right? They've gone out and drafted, you know, Christian Kirk. They've, you know, there's still plenty of firepower. Cliff Kingsbury is a boob. And we put together some stats. One, the impetus, give some credit to the folks, what was it, the Action Network where you saw it first? What he does to start and finish a season, it is unbelievable. Now, listen, I was ready about midseason to say to Eric Eager, whom we'll bring this up with Eager coming up in our next
people
hour.
People call him Iggy.
Iggy, yeah. People call him Iggy. They talked about just how bad Cliff Kingsbury was. And when they were 7-0, I'm like, well, all right, you guys missed the boat on that. What it is, it's not that he's devoid of ability. It's he's devoid of ability once the season begins. Apparently, he's not bad at the offseason of getting a plan together. But then once it's time to then adjust to what everybody else is doing, once it's time to give a new wrinkle, he's got some new stuff. But it's all shown to you in the first handful of games. Curtis, games 1-7 versus the rest of the year since 2013 for Cliff Kingsbury looks like what?
We'll do the games 1-7. And
right.
His year by year. The first six of these are...
So this is how he starts. The first 6 years are Texas Tech. Last three are the Arizona Cardinals.
Yes.
Okay.
7-0.
Okay.
3-4.
Okay.
5-2.
Okay.
3-4.
Okay.
4-3. 5-2. 3-3-1. 5-2. 7-0.
Collectively?
42-20-1.
How's he finish, though, Curtis? When it's money time, what do you get?
Sad face. Emoji. 1-5. 1-4. 2-4, 2-3, 2-4, 0-5.
All right, stop. That's the Texas Tech. Let me tell you, this is why the man was fired. 1-5, 1-4, 2-4, 2-3, 2-4, 0-5. That's atrocious. But it certainly has gotten better with the Cardinals, right?
No. 2-7, 3-6, 4-7. Combined record, 17-45, a 274 win percentage.
And somebody put out what he's done, like, in the just the final handful, like, what his streaks have been, right? Because this year he finished losing 5 of 6, right?
Mm-hmm.
It gets even worse, like, at the very, very end.
Yep. I got him here. Five of six, he's lost. Starting in 13, lost 5 of 6, 4 of 6, 4 of 6, 6 of 8, 6 of 8, 5 of 5, 7 of 9, 5 of 7, 5 of 6. And really 5 of 7, because that would also count.
I think the 5 of 6 might be counting the
playoffs. That was counting last night. Okay, you're right.
Yeah, because he had 4 of 5 to finish the regular season.
Right.
All right, a 675 winning percentage to start, a 274 winning percentage to finish, and frankly to fail.
Freudian slip.
So he started at Texas Tech in 13, the same year Andy Reid came to the Kansas City Chiefs. So Andy Reid, we won't go through each game, but so suffice it to say, or each season, we'll give you the totals. First 7 games, again, Cliff Kingsbury, 42-20-1. Andy Reid, 43-20. Andy Reid is only a half game better than Cliff Kingsbury to start. Now, do keep in mind his Texas Tech numbers are bloated by some non-cons, right? So it's not to say that he's Andy Reid's equal. He's not. Andy Reid's going up against NFL teams, and early on it was a rebuilding Chiefs team that he immediately turned around to 11-5. But he's gone 43-20. That's even with this year's 3-4 start. That's with 2015's 2-5 start, right? Mm-hmm. He's 43-20, a 683 win percentage. Where Cliff Kingsbury finishes 274, Andy Reid gets even better the rest of the way, finishing with a 708 winning margin or 708 winning percentage. He's 68-28 the rest of the year.
And that includes two
difference.
Losses in which his starters weren't playing, 2013 and last year.
That's
they
right.
Just
where and a win. Because Chase McDaniel went 1-1 in those mail-in games.
Yeah.
Patrick Mahomes 1-1.
So, two,
and then Chad Henne lost one. So he's 2-2 in mail-in games.
And by the way, he is 30-5 the last 3 years.
Over.
Since, you know, from week 8 on. 30-5.
Okay. Yeah. The last 3 years, 10-2, 10-2, 10-1. I mean, that's staggering. And even the year before in 18, he's 7-4, And that came with the losses in the middle of the season and then finishing with a six-game win streak.
Yeah.
So if you wanted to cherry pick it, you know, you could try to make that look even better. But, like, the problem with Cliff Kingsbury and what you have here in Kansas City is Andy Reid is good in the offseason. Andy Reid is good when you start the season. Andy Reid is good at making adjustments in the season. And Andy Reid is good finishing the season. And Cliff Kingsbury is a college coach. I mean, it was staggering to watch just how piss poor the Cardinals were last night. I mean, unbelievable. I mean, and I would say gutless in the second half. In the second half, he went into preservation mode to try to keep the score from being not too bad. He went for a two that doesn't even, I'm not even sure why he went for two. Other than just like, oh, I see a scenario where they get one field goal and this still gets me there with two more made, you know, twos. But, I mean, that's the least of my worries. He converted it. He went for it and converted it. He's in the get-it-right business, and he got it right. He took a 55-yard field goal and made it on 4th and 20. He was going for it on 4th and 10. On 4th and 20, he took the field goal. Not the worst. But on the one touchdown drive that he had, they took over 6 minutes. Five of the first nine plays were running plays, and you were chasing four touchdowns. I mean, he literally, at the end of the game, when was the last time you saw, again, none of this has to do with the fact that I was only 28 yards away from advancing, 28 yards passing from Kyler Murray from advancing in my fantasy playoff league. None of it has to do with that. None of that. This is just good, hard analysis here. When was the last time you saw him bench the starting quarterback? Like, Ben Roethlisberger didn't take a seat when the Chiefs were blowing him out. Ben Roethlisberger took every snap to the end of the game. What he with a minute to, first of all, he didn't use his last timeout. You know who you made happy? You know who you made happy? Rams fans. Rams fans. You didn't even do the annoying timeout when you can't win that every other coach does. No, I'm going to fight to the very end. No, he mailed it in. Not only was he running the ball in the second half, seemingly looking to get out of there as fast as possible, but then he doesn't even use his last time out, and he benches his quarterback in the end and has the backup quarterback come in and hand off. I mean, if I'm Kyler Murray, I'm like, no. This is my turd, and I'm finishing it. I'm not walking away. I'm not putting this disaster with somebody else. I mean, maybe I'm making too much of it, but I think that's ridiculous.
No, I'm with you. I mean, think people are making too little of it.
I think it's absolutely embarrassing. Absolutely embarrassing. The way that game finished. And I think Cliff Kingsbury quit. You know, like, no, he was still calling plays, but he quit trying to win that game after about the first drive of the third quarter. He was done. And he was looking to limit the damage and make sure that it didn't look worse than what the Steelers had or worse than what the Patriots had. He looked to just kind of save face. And that's brutal.
Yeah.
That is brutal.
At 28-0, that's when it stopped.
So I want to point out again, Cliff Kingsbury has finished that poorly every year going back to 2013. He was fired from a college job, and he was hired in the NFL while guys like Eric Bieniemy can't get a job and Brian Flores is fired after back-to-back winning seasons. Listen, I don't care if there's a good reason to keep him or not. How could a young African-American coach who's had success – or even a young African-American kid who looks at the league go, oh, yeah, I've got a chance. Cliff Kingsbury coaches on. Brian Flores is interviewing for jobs. And, frankly, we'll probably get one, we hope. Jared Mayo may get one. Andy Reid says that he thinks it ends for Eric Bieniemy, the quest for a job, that he gets a job. So the numbers may actually go up. But, like, if there's one thing I'm certain of, you are not getting to the promised land with Cliff Kingsbury. That's not happening. There's no way. And the Cardinals are just delaying. If there's a great candidate available this year, they've got a lot of the pieces ready to roll, and they're not going to make a move. And that's why, listen, Mike McCarthy is under a lot of scrutiny, and I think there's a lot of reasons to keep Mike McCarthy. But I will give you this about Jerry Jones as an owner. I think he's way too present. He certainly shouldn't be the final say on personnel. I think his press conferences after games, 79 years old and God only knows how many beverages into the evening, are a ridiculous occurrence. But he at least demands winning. I mean, he gets in the way of it sometimes, but he at least is doing everything he can. Even if it's not the right thing, he's doing what he thinks is the right thing to try to win. The Cardinals will just sit back and go, building was pretty full. We'll stick with Glamour Boy, Cliff Kingsbury. We'll take a break. We're going to talk to Tim Grunhard, talking Chiefs football next here in the program.
The Program with Soren Petro.
No, I'm not dense. I just have no imagination.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Player, coach, pain in the ass. He's done it all on the gridiron from South Bend to Arrowhead. From football on the radio, back to football, then more radio, then a little more football, and now radio again. It's Tim Grunhard on the Program. Tim Grunhard is presented by CBD American Shaman. Do you know what the benefits of CBD are? Stop in at one of the 40-plus CBD American Shaman locations and see how CBD can bring balance to your body and mind. CBDAmericanShaman.com.
Tim Grunhard, how are you, my friend?
I'm hanging in there, buddy. I am hanging in there. I just was talking to Curtis. I'm just still sore, but it's good to get out of the house and get out and get some fresh air and kind of get moving again. So glad to be in here in the studio today and hanging out with you guys. Had a lot of football to watch, which, you know, when I did it two Wednesdays ago, whenever it was, I think the 6th or something, there's a lot of football to watch, so I kind of got through that. So the football's been getting me through but still sore, Saran. Still really sore and still on the mend.
Yeah, Tim, if people don't know, took a fall on the ice and broke ribs and even collapsed a lung with those ribs. So the ribs punctured the lung. That's no joke, man. Like, how'd you do it? How'd you go down?
Well, I was Sarah, we just got home, basically, from Cincinnati. And she said, "Yeah, you know, let's go look at the Christmas lights one more time. We'll take the dogs for a walk. It's kind of a nice evening." It was cold, but it wasn't snowing or raining or anything like that. So I said, "Okay, well." So I was taking the dog out, and earlier in the day it was a little bit above freezing. So the snow and stuff from New Year's, I guess he had some snow on New Year's, melted down into our driveway, and then it refroze as it got cooler in the evening, and I didn't know that. But right before I stepped off of my stoop into my driveway, which is a brick stoop onto a asphalt driveway, I told Sarah, I said, "It looks pretty icy out here, so be careful." And those were the last words I said and stepped out there, and my foot gave out, and I flew up in the air. I mean, I felt like I went real high. I have it on my Ring video, which is it's hard to watch. But I didn't go as high as I thought I was. I felt like I was floating in the air for a while here as this was going on. And when I landed, I turned because I know better to land. If you can, when you're falling, if you can do it, try to land on your side, not on the back of your head, because, I mean, then you really can have some issues. I landed on my side. Thank God I was able to turn a little bit. And I felt my ribs shift. I got the wind knocked out of me, the ribs. I felt everything kind of shift. And I felt like, gosh, I must have pulled a muscle. I was laying there for about 4 or 5 minutes. I couldn't get up. And seriously, I'm going to call an ambulance. I said, "No, just let me kind of compose myself here." And so I crawled over to the dryer spot and got up and went in the house and sat down and started to shake, which I thought just because I was cold. I was laying on the ice for about 5 minutes. And it must have been kind of a shock deal breaking a bone, which I've never done, guys. I've never broken a bone. I never, even in 11 years in the NFL and 4 years in college, and I've had a lot of orthopedic surgeries, but I've never broken a bone. So I guess that's what happens. I started to shake a little bit and kind of settled down and went to bed. I couldn't really sleep and got up in the morning and called my doctor. I said, "Hey, you know, I'm not feeling right. I landed on my side and hurt my ribs. I think I pulled a muscle. I think I should go get an x-ray." He goes, "Yeah, just to be safe, go get an x-ray." So I went in over here to their imaging center over off of Metcalf, and they took an x-ray. And as I was driving home with Sarah, my doctor called and said, "Hey, where are you?" I said, "We're just almost home." He goes, "Turn around. Go back and get those films and go to the emergency room because you have 4 broken ribs and a punctured lung." And I was like, wow. So that was quite a awakening. So you got to go through a lot of stuff. Obviously, the lung is very, very it's very important, Soren, to have a lung working. So
yeah.
it hurts a lot. But so they put a tube in my chest and it helped to inflate it and then had to go through about 4 or 5 days of different steps of that process, and that's what really took the longest. I was in the hospital for 4 days, almost five days, and then out. So yeah, thank God I'm didn't land on the back of my head and was more serious, but certainly was a shock. It was quite the deal. So. But good to be back rolling a little bit here. So,
yeah, well, good to have you back, and I'm glad you're doing better. Yeah. And it's no joke. I mean, you got to be careful around that ice. I mean, you mentioned it. There you are, looking out for someone. Think about it. More than a decade battling Hall of Famers and 300 plus pound men, and it's a walk with the dog that brings you down to your where you can't get up.
It probably, you know, I was always taught never lay on the field, but I was certainly laying on the field there. That's for sure. Yeah.
Do you have a new respect for, like, you know, like, because I guarantee you, a guy like you, you know, and, you know, Jim Brown used to say, I never laid on the football field, and that is a badge of honor. But, like, after going through something like that, you're like, okay, there are some things that, like, actually, you absolutely just can't get up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, in the back of my mind, listen, I've seen really horrible injuries where guys were laid on the field. And in fact, I was trying to think of the guy's name while you were talking about that guy from the Jets who was paralyzed, and I was right there when that happened.
Bird.
Yeah, Dennis Bird. You try to be macho, and you're trying to be tough, and you're trying to be cool. That's all that is yeah, I'm too cool. I'm not going to lay on the field. I'm tougher than anybody else. But, yeah, this will bring you back around to realizing that, you know, there are certain injuries and certain things that happen that just, you know, you can't control. And when that happens, you know, you just pray that it's not as serious as it could be. So, yeah, no, I do have, you're right. And I think that's a great point. I do have more respect for, you know, like the guy who, when they play, who was it when the Chiefs played the Chargers, and that they didn't look like much in the back of the end zone.
Tight end.
Yeah. He hit his head and got knocked out, and was, you know, that was really, really a scary thing. And
Buda Baker going down last night in the game. I don't know if people were still watching at that point because the game is such a turd. But you know, he you know, took a bad shot kind of to the side of the head, and then went down on his head, and kind of his neck kind of rolled, and it looked in the arm up in the air just like the Charger guy. And of course he was released from the hospital today, so that's good news. But that was a scary thing on there. And Cam Akers, the Rams player, came over and gave him the good night or whatever kind of gesture that almost started a brawl there. And then I think he realized, oh my God, this guy's actually really hurt.
Right.
So it's nice to see him actually come over and have concern for him after he realized, oh, wait a minute, this is something that's serious there. Tim, I want to get your thoughts. You know, you're friends with Mike McCarthy.
Yeah.
What do you make of the firestorm that's coming from that game and really almost just from the final drive? What's your reaction to it, knowing Mike McCarthy and all?
Well, I feel for Mike, it just seems like whenever he takes two steps forward, he ends up taking three steps back. You know, the pre-snap penalties that they had were just uncalled for. I don't know how many there were, but there had to be at least 8 or 9 offsides or illegal procedures or you know, different things that just penalties just killed that team. And that, you know what, that is a reflection of the coach. The coach has got to have him ready. I'm not taking
– Is it all the coach? I want to ask – that's what I want to ask you. Like, did Marty have some guys that were, like, pretty good players? And he's like, nope, like, we're not dealing with it. I mean, we know what happened at the end where we, you know, he brought in guys that were lesser of character. But would you ever see him, you know, cut somebody that you're like, wait a minute, that guy's good enough to play – and it was because he made those kind of mistakes. Like, is it possible?
Yeah.
And I'm clearly looking for a reason to not blame Mike McCarthy because I root for Mike McCarthy. Being a Baker guy and a friend of yours and everything and having coached for the Chiefs, I'd like to see the guy have success. And he has had success. He's won a Super Bowl, for crying out loud. But is part of it maybe that there are some guys that like, he probably would have said, no, this we're not keeping this guy. And Jerry Jones vetoes it and says, no, I drafted him. He's a good player. You're keeping him.
That certainly could be. And I wouldn't doubt that, as we all know, Jerry Jones has had the finger on the pulse of that team. Even back when I was playing, when he bought that team, he decided he was going to be the GM and basically make all the decisions. And I'm sure that that's part of it. And, you know, I'm sure that Mike is frustrated. He would never say that in public about being frustrated about that situation, but I'm sure he is. But, you know, you listen, you got to have discipline on your team, and your team is a reflection of the coaching. So, yeah, I mean, as much as I love Mike and root for Mike, that's not a, there was a, I had a couple text messages from friends that I'm very close with that are close with Mike, too. They said, hey, do you think he's going to be gone after this game? And I said, no, he can't be. But there is some buzz and some talk about, hey, listen, if you, you have such a good football team and they just didn't perform out there. Now, listen, they came back and they played hard and they finished the game and they had a, they gave themselves a chance to win at the end, which is really interesting. And, you know, all the as much as I was against that run, I kind of understand why they did it, because now they're putting themselves at maybe the 25-yard line if you would have slid about five yards earlier. Then you have a sort of a chance, and we've seen this in games this year where, you know, the last play of the game in the end zone and you know, guys are too far deep in the end zone and receiver comes up near the goal line and catches the ball. And I think, you know, it was the Detroit did it against Minnesota, and there was other games like that this year. So the possibility was there, and I can understand why he did it. I think that Dak probably should have slid a little bit earlier, maybe, if he was just cognizant of the time. But the other thing is you got to give the ball to the official. Don't give the ball to the center. The center gets the ball. He puts it down. The umpire, and I was going crazy during this time because I was saying, get the umpire out of the way. But you remember, everybody, the umpire has to touch the ball. It has to set the ball before you can snap it. So it's not just that the offensive lineman or the center could take the ball and set it down. He's got to do it. The thing I didn't like about what the umpire did is once he set it, then he went back in and moved it again. I mean, listen, that 4 inches was not going to be a big difference, but that 4 inches might have taken away an opportunity to get one more snap off. So the officials certainly had a little bit of a role in that last 5 seconds. But, you know, I think, you know, just – listen, Marty used to say it all the time when we'd work on these situations. And remember, when you're in a two-minute situation, everybody out there, you're not going against anybody but the clock. You're not going against the other team. You're not going against the down and distances. You're not going against, you know, the defensive schemes. You're going against the clock. The clock is your enemy. The clock is your opponent. And you've got to be able to handle that clock. And guys like Joe Montana that I've been in the huddle and seen him do it so many times are so expert at handling the clock and handling the pressure and handling those situations. And I think Dak Prescott maybe tried to do a little too much. And then, you know, the last, if you're roaming around and you're not thinking in your hand, you got to get the ball to the official. Now, whether the official was there in a timely fashion to get the ball, that's up for debate. But when he moved the ball like that, now, the other thing I thought they should have done, they should have had another play. Don't go and spike it. Call two plays in the huddle. Say, okay, listen, we're running this draw. Get up to the line of scrimmage, and then we're going to do four verts and just trying to get open. I'll roll around and see if we can find somebody open in the end zone. They didn't do that either. They were going to spike the ball. And when you spike the ball, it takes a little bit of time to get the ball up and spike it. It takes another second and a half they didn't have. So it was just a debacle. It was a debacle by starting with the Cowboys, and it starts with the coaching, and then it goes to the quarterback, and then it goes to, you know, I thought the officials and the umpire probably could have done a better job. But, you know, you've got to be prepared for those situations, and the Cowboys just weren't prepared.
Can I offer that if it was a debacle, it was a debacle in the first half? Like, it was a debacle in the first quarter. Like, I don't understand how Dan Quinn is being showered with all this praise and he's being interviewed by four different teams this week. You know, Kyle Shanahan pantsed him in the first quarter.
Yeah, he did.
I mean, just pants Dan Quinn.
Absolutely right.
And no one is talking about that. They're putting it all on Mike McCarthy and his clock management. First of all, he doesn't call there are going to be job interviews, and there's the chance that he loses his job to Kellen Moore, who was the guy who called the draw. Now, everyone's like, well, Mike McCarthy okayed it. Well, I mean, like, how did that process work? Like, really? If you've got a play caller, what is Mike McCarthy, like, we're taking an extra second or two for him to go, okay, yeah, I'm good with that one.
Right.
BS. That's Mike McCarthy taking the sword for his assistant coach. And I don't think enough is getting said of that. Kellen Moore called the draw. Now, if you want to say, hey, he coaches Kellen Moore, therefore it's on him, absolutely it is. But if we're going to get down to the nitty-gritty of it and talk about what should have happened, and I am intrigued by the fact that, you know, you said, like, so you guys were even practicing back then? Because I don't remember when it became a thing. Like, it's been 4 or 5 years, but I don't remember guys back in your era running the ball back over to the hash mark. You know, you just kind of got down there and waited on the refs to do it. Now guys know, get the ball, run it over there, and you know, be there, like you said, hand it right to the ref because he's got to spot it. Doesn't matter where you think it goes. he's got to spot it. You guys actually worked on that all the way back in your day?
Yeah, I mean, that was a big point of emphasis with Marty, especially when we do our two-minute situations, is talking about, listen, getting out of bounds. If you don't get out of bounds, is get the ball to the official. You know, you have to meet the official. You got to go to the official, get the ball in his hands, and let him get it down. So, yeah, those things were talked about and were practiced.
Okay. That's interesting.
But I will tell you this, knowing Mike McCarthy, I don't think he's going to get fired. And knowing him the way I do, he's going to take all of the flack from the media and everybody else in the fan base because of that loss. But you got to remember this. One of the things that Mike McCarthy, I think, did a great job, and you know, listen, you can give Dan Quinn a lot of credit, but he hired Dan Quinn to bring Dan Quinn in. And that defense has went from the worst defense in the league to right up around the top 10 defense. And you're right. They didn't play very well. Nobody played really well in that game for the Cowboys. You know, they were back in the game because they're talented. And, listen, you got a quarterback who can compete. And, listen, Dak Prescott can compete. You're going to have a chance to win a football game, especially in the playoffs. But you got to remember, I mean, this team, the first year he was there, that defense was left high and dry. It was horrible. Then they bring in, you know, they went out and they drafted Parsons. They went out and they drafted Diggs. They went out and they found some, you know, some free agents in the defensive market, and they straightened that defense out. Now you have your offense kind of clicking around. You can straighten that out. I still think that the running back, Elliott, I think he's lost a step. I think he's done.
They'll cut him.
He is done. He just, I mean, he doesn't show any burst at all. He lumbers around and yeah. So you go out and you find yourself a halfway decent running, but they have good receivers there. They've had some injuries in the receiver core this year. I just think it'd be a whole big time disservice to Mike McCarthy that, you know, listen, they went a long way from the year before defensively, and he is an offensive mind. He's an offensive coach. He's an offensive guru. Listen, he was one of the guys. So he started out with Paul Hackett at University of Pittsburgh. Now, you may like Paul Hackett, you may not like Paul Hackett, but Paul Hackett had a very good offensive scheme that you know, was implemented by Joe Montana and the 49ers, and then his son Nathaniel, who's probably going to get, he might have a head coaching job. His name's been brought up. He's another offensive guy. So, I mean, the Hackett offensive scheme was not horrible, and that's what Mike McCarthy's basically running, is a lot of that, because he cut his teeth with Hackett at University of Pittsburgh back in the day, and then, you know, it came up. So I think he's got a great offensive mind. You get a good defense put together, give him another year. Now, if they continue to struggle or they get to the playoffs and continue to lose, and for the Cowboys, they want to be America's team, they want to get back to the Super Bowl, there might be a little extra pressure, but you take that job, you understand that pressure's there. So I would hope that they'd give him another year just to say, listen, okay, we straightened the defense out. Now we'll just tweak this offense and let's see where we can go from there.
It does seem like they're going to lose Dan Quinn, though.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
But Dan Quinn was unceremoniously sent packing in Atlanta because they said it was all Kyle Shanahan. So, like, there's talk like, well, do you fire McCarthy and make Dan Quinn the head coach? No, you know, you don't.
I find it funny, too. You know what? There's so many of these retreads. The guys that, you know, when are they going to learn their lesson? You know, Dan Quinn had a year or two of some good football down in Atlanta, right? He was in Atlanta. And, you know, and then he got fired. Then
went to the Super Bowl with Kyle Shanahan as his play caller.
Mm-hmm. And then you look at who's the defensive guy who was a head coach at the Denver Broncos?
Dick Fangio?
Yeah, no, the African American guy.
Vance Joseph, who's now down at Arizona.
Yeah, so there's a lot of people talking about him getting a job again, and you know, so it just seems like, you know, sometimes you get these coordinators that they go up and they become head coaches, and then they struggle, and then they go back to coordinators and they do a hell of a job, and then people go, oh, let's try this again.
But you know,
fool
why
me
I would
once,
give
shame on you, fool me twice, shame
right.
on me.
But you know why I would give Vance Joseph a shot
I
over Dan Quinn?
I agree with Vance Joseph. Yeah, me too.
You know why I would give him a shot over Dan Quinn, though? Dan Quinn had an MVP quarterback, right? One year with Kyle Shanahan, Matt Ryan won the MVP. He had a quarterback. He had offense. He had firepower, and they couldn't win. Vance Joseph went to war with, what was it?
Quarterbacks? Oh, God.
The kid from Lee Summit and,
I don't even think he was there. He wasn't Drew Locke was drafted by Fangio because they didn't want him. I mean, Fangio, and it's a famous story that Fangio was against that pick wholeheartedly and treated Locke like that when he first got there. And I know this personally because I know Locke's coach, that coached him here in Kansas City very, very well. And that's why they went out and got that retread quarterback, and they put him in there, and they realized he was done.
Case Keenum,
yeah. So, yeah. So.
And Trevor Siemian. Those were his two main starters the 2 years that Vance Joseph was in.
Right, and we all know that this quarterback-driven league, and if you look at look at last night, I mean, I heard you talking about the quarterback play with the Arizona Cardinals yesterday. I mean, wow. I mean, that was ugly. That was really ugly. And Cliff Kingsbury is funny because I was doing something. I was doing some stuff for my book, and I didn't realize this, sir. And I don't think we ever talked about this, but I didn't realize it. I forgot that the quarterback for my team in Cologne, Germany, when I was coaching the Cologne Centurions, was Cliff Kingsbury. Was our quarterback?
Wow. Oh my Lord!
Were you guys bad at the end of the year?
You know, it's funny you said that because I was trying to look up. I was trying to look
were
up.
You like 6-0 to start? And
I was in the parking lot. And I was 2-5. I'm gonna see if I could find stats on how bad he was in the second half of games. Because I'm sure as a quarterback, he was the same way. But I didn't even realize that. But
wow.
Yeah. So listen, I thought that the playoffs kind of went the way we all thought they were going to go. You know, I know the Cowboys, everybody talked about the Cowboys this, Cowboys that, but the 49ers have been playing really, really well of late, and the Cowboys have not really played very well of late. So, I mean, I think the momentum, the winds of momentum are with the 49ers. You know, Buffalo, and I guess we'll talk about them and the Chiefs, but Buffalo just laid it on the Pats. I mean, that was unbelievable how they played. But you know what? I'm glad they did that because – you know, it's going to be hard to replicate that kind of performance. The get that out of your system before you come here to Kansas City. And, you know, the Steelers, and you talk about guys and you talk about falling. I have a new respect for Ben Roethlisberger because he falls as ugly as I fell on the ice. Every time he falls, it looks like he's really hurt and never getting back up.
Yeah, because he's almost 40, and that's what the hell happens when you get old. You don't fall like you used to.
That's right. That's right.
You go down, it sucks. It's a problem. I mean, it's when you know it's time to get the hell out of the game, right?
That's like, right. You know it's time to stay in Florida and during the winter.
It's when you get up and you go, oh whoopsie daisy.
It's no different for us non-athletes, right, that didn't play professional sports. It's like, oh, hey, we got a father-daughter. Yet, nope, those days are over. Not playing that. Got a father-son. Nope. Maybe 5 years ago, maybe. No. There's a spot. Everybody reaches it. Some people can last longer. Some people work out more, and they extend that window. But it comes for everybody where you're like, no. Fatty, fall down, go boom. No more.
That's funny you say it because Mike Webster, his famous speech, when we did our preseason banquet in 1990, you know, they do that over, I think it was down at the West End or whatever it was, and Mike Webster was the keynote speaker for the Chiefs. He went up there and he said, you know, it ends for us all, some sooner than others, but it ends for us all, and it certainly does. It ends for us all, and age is the great equalizer when it comes to athletics, that's for sure.
Yes, it is. All right, we are very happy to have Tim Grunhard back in studio. We'll take a break, talk about Chiefs. Bills next with Grunny.
The program with Seren Petro.
You guys really suck. You guys really suck.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Talking football with Tim Grunhard, Chiefs Hall of Famer, here with us in the program. Tim, let me ask you this. Do you like the Chiefs to bounce back and beat the Bills? Does the way they lost the first time bode well for them, or does it just empower and give confidence to Buffalo and make it even more difficult for the Chiefs to win?
I always think it's hard to beat somebody twice in a year, especially good football teams. Both these teams are good football teams. I think the Chiefs have got a lot to look at. They didn't play particularly well. They didn't have Chris Jones. They didn't play particularly well in the secondary. Offensively, that was about the time when Patrick Mahomes realized that, hey, listen, I've got to start taking what is given to me. I think he had three interceptions in that game or three turnovers in that game. So, the teams that are left in the AFC are all teams that have beat the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, the Bengals, obviously, the Titans, and then now Buffalo. So the Chiefs, you know, it's kind of a revenge tour. I think a lot of times it's easier to win the second time around than to be that guy, the team that wins and then goes in. But this is the fourth time that these guys will have played in 2 years now. So they played in the regular season, and the Chiefs had pretty much handled these guys except for the last time. So this will be a really interesting game. I think the Chiefs win this football game, and I'll tell you, the main reason is I think that Patrick Mahomes has decided that, you know, he's going to take what's given to him. He's going to be patient, and he's going to look for the open receiver, not try and make those plays. And then, like we saw in the Pittsburgh game, I thought Pittsburgh is kind of going to be, you know, maybe I don't think it's an outlier. I think people are deciding, hey, listen, we can't just let the Chiefs dink and dunk us up and down the field and let their athletes get the ball in space and make us, you know, and take those 8, 10, 12 play, 12-yard drives and those 8, 10, and 12 play drives against us. So, you know, we better come up and put a little bit of pressure. And that's what the Steelers did. The first quarter, it looked like the Steelers, you know, they were bringing some pressure, which is, you know, unusual. And the Chiefs, I don't think they were ready for it. I really don't. I think offensive line-wise, we're just looking. I don't think Creed Humphreys played that particularly that well in the game. I don't think that Brown played particularly well. But I thought in the second half they were able to make some adjustments and realize, hey, listen, there are some things out there that we can do now to find some guys open. And he was 4 of 5, I believe, on his deep balls, which is very unusual for Patrick Mahomes this year. They have not had the opportunity to get the ball down the field. So 4 of 5 for 110, 111 yards on the deep balls is a good sign for the Chiefs. It'll be interesting to see if Buffalo does what they did last time. Buffalo had success saying, listen, we're not going to let you throw the ball up the field. And remember, the last time the Chiefs beat Buffalo, they ran the ball very efficiently against them in the regular season. Not the playoffs, but the regular season game. And then, you know, they were the first ones to say, hey, listen, we're not giving the deep ball. It'll be interesting to see what the Bills decide to do. Will they come up and put pressure on Patrick Mahomes and try to take away the dink and dunks and say, listen, we're going to give you all that underneath stuff, and you're going to have to move the ball up and down the field against us, and we're going to be able to score. It's going to be a really fun game, chess game to watch.
And you're picking who?
I'm picking the Chiefs. I think that it's going to be too hard for Buffalo to come in here and win the second time. Andy Reid's got a lot of film on what they did to stop him, and I think he's going to be able to take advantage of that.
Yeah, me too. Tim, we're so glad to have you back, buddy. Take care of yourself, and we'll talk again next week.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Good talking to you, too.
You bet. Tim Grunhart, Chiefs Hall of Famer, joins us each and every week here in the program. Looking forward to talking to him about a big win against the Bills.
We're at the end of the hour question. Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue in Olathe, Leawood, and the original in the gas station at 47th and Mission.
All right, David Long of the Rams now has the shortest pick six in postseason history. Whose record did he break? Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue.